You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome in to the very first October edition of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. It's actually not the first October edition, but it's the first October edition in which we've actually still been in season, when we're talking about this, in the history of the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Ladies and gentlemen, playoff baseball is here. Last time we were here, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion, but was not official that they would even make the playoffs. And now we're here. And we have one of the best, most exciting playoff games in the history of Major League Baseball. No joke, no embellishment on that one to come back to here in a minute. But first, as I said, this is the Kansas City Baseball Vault brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr. With me, as always, is the probably somewhat tired but unflappable, unsinkable Michael Engel. Mike, how's it going?
Yeah, you're right. I am a little bit tired. I was at the game last night.
Were you up late last night or something? Was there something going on?
Yeah, I hung out with a few friends. You know.
40,000 maybe?
Yeah, about 40,000 or so. They were a little loud, though. But
a little loud. I hate it.
Yeah.
But for those who... are curious, we are recording this on Wednesday, October 1st. So right after the Royals, in scintillating fashion, have won the wild card game. And man, oh boy, Michael Engel, we've got a ton to talk about. And actually, what we're going to do right now is bring in with us a guest host, if you will, for the evening, Kevin Scobie. We're trying to get him on the line. He's been with us before. He's kind of the resident pitching guru, has a lot of good experience. We're going to bring him in. He's going to co-host with us here. He'll be here in a few minutes. Once he lets us know he's ready, we'll pull him in. So if we have to stop here in a second, that'll be why. But man, oh man, do we have a lot to talk about. First of all, just some overall perspective on everything.
I mean,
it's here. We never
really got a chance to talk after the Royals even clinched and after the season finally ended because, you know, that happened on Friday. And you know, normally we'll record this on like a Monday or something. It's Wednesday, of course, now. So
Monday was the Chiefs game where props to the Chiefs fans. They set the sound record. I was there. So that's why we couldn't record on Monday. And last night was obviously the wild card game. We're not going to record during that. Right. So here we are. You know, it was, and I actually tweeted out at one point last night when I thought the Royals very well might lose that I was disappointed that we would not actually get to do a positive October podcast in season. And here the Royals must have heard me and said, you know what? We like the Kansas Ball Vault.
We're going to give you that positive
fun podcast to talk about. And that's what they did. But, I mean, we never, I honestly. Oh, here he is, Scobie. Kevin Scobie.
Hello.
Kevin, how's it going, man?
Voices just started to come back in the last hour.
So I know that feel.
Right.
You're not alone in that regard. Mm. Many people lost their voice last night, and it was flipping loud out at Kauffman. And I was not there for the game, but you could hear it on TV, and I was screaming in my house and fist pumps all over the place. And I mean, before we get into this, before we get into the specifics of the game, I just want to talk about, I mean, from my personal perspective, it was getting to the point, I mean, even after last year, where I legitimately was not sure if I would ever see the Royals in the playoffs. I mean, the rational side of me said it's probably going to happen at some point in my life. You know, God willing, I have another 60 or so years to live, so hopefully it's going to happen.
You might get two more of these.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a question of when and how I'd be able to enjoy it and all that. And here we are, you know, October baseball. And no more of this, you know, I personally hate baseball playoffs in general. And I guess I hate it. It's a love-hate thing because The best part about it is that anything can happen. And so the Royals have a legitimate shot at going making some noise in this thing. But the worst part about it is that anything can happen. And it's such a small sample size that it kind of devalues, you know, so a team like the Angels could lose to the Royals and they were the best team, you know, for clearly the best team by the end of the season and definitely in the second half. So what does that tell you? But that's a different discussion. Even more than that, I hate the wild card game. It's just a one and done thing. But what it does give you is incredible amount of excitement and just that do or die feeling. And that's what they had last night. And it was just unbelievable. And there's no more of these kind of, oh, well, the Royals only made the wild card game and they lost, so it wasn't really the playoffs. It doesn't count. We still don't get to reset the clock on 29 years. Now it's official. You can't have – I mean, that's wrong anyway, but that excuse is out the window now. They've got a full division series coming up starting tomorrow, Thursday night, and it's going to be amazing. I mean, what are you – give me your guys' thoughts on this. I'm out of my mind here with how awesome this.
Well, I think anybody who said the wild card is in the playoffs after seeing last night's game really couldn't say that. That was, I mean, I can't think of another game that's been that similar, at least like from Royals games that I've seen. Like the closest I can think of as far as like a Royals game is, you know, that was meaningful and had that kind of drama was back in 2003, and it was in August. The Royals were hosting the Yankees, and I think they were in first, or they were maybe a game out or something like that. And it was, I think it was the first game of the series, and they ended up winning it like 9-7 or something like that, similar score even. And the teams just kept trading the lead back and forth, and I think they combined for like 12 doubles or some record number of doubles between two teams. And it was, you know, it was the same kind of thing. It's like Royals fall behind and everybody's, you know, somber, and then Royals take the lead and it just explodes, and it just kept going back and forth, and then finally they ended up winning. But I mean, obviously that's not, you know, that was an August series in 2003. That's not right now, you know, that's not last night where it's an actual do or die game. I mean, they still had three more games in that series in August. You know, the Royals would have lost like they probably should have. You know, we'd be talking completely different things. We'd be talking about the last James Shields start, the last RBI singles by Billy Butler. We'd be talking about, you know, which one of Wade Davis and Greg Holland stay. So, man, it just the full gamut of every emotion possible in one, you know, 5-hour game. And holy crap, couldn't be happier that I was able to go to it, much less, you know, even watch it. I have part of it DVR'd, and I'm going to watch it a few times, I think, between, you know, I don't know, maybe before tomorrow. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've watched the highlight of Sal's walk-off today, just because I have the MLB TV app or the MLB app on my phone, so it's just, you know, it's just easy. You just got a couple minutes, and hey, I'll fire it up, and I'll watch that hit again, and watch the walk-off, and watch or listen to Lefevre's call, which is pretty great.
Yeah,
it was good. I don't know, man. I mean, the start of the seventh inning, they were down 7-4. And at that point in the game, especially with the Royals offense, it was sort of like, there's no shot at this. There's no way that they can come back. Yeah, though the A's don't have a bullpen like the Royals have, but still, there's a fair amount of luck that's involved with the Royals offense because they put the ball in play so much, but none of them hit the ball hard. And really, in the entire last three innings, nobody hit the ball hard. The Hosmer's ball off the wall in the ninth. So it's just, I mean, I'm sitting there. We put the baby to bed, and I'm trying to not yell and scream to wake her up, and just it felt like I was playing again. That was kind of great thing. So I got a lot of texts from teammates of mine that basically just said the same thing. I was like, this is what it felt like. The regional championship game that we played in our sophomore year at Maple Woods. I'm like, this is what it was all about. It felt just like that.
Yeah. So how do you, like, from your perspective, I mean, that's interesting you say that. Like, because me, the farthest level I went was Summer Rec League. There wasn't a meaningful game in that situation. But like, you know, something like this with a team like the Royals, they're, you know, guys who have come up through much of the system, and then you get guys like Guthrie and Shields who are, you know, really the vocal leaders, you know, in the clubhouse. I mean, how is that does that mean that some of that team chemistry conversation is a little bit legitimate, or is it just, you know, it's a one game playoff and they happen to get hot in a couple innings? And I mean, how does that, I don't know. I don't really have a question, I guess. I'm just thinking out loud right now. What do you think about that? I mean,
I've struggled with myself on that, because obviously a lot of stuff that I've write and the rest of I talk about is more sabermetrically inclined. But I do have the playing experience that I understand that sometimes, even though I will say a lot of times that the eighth and ninth inning are the same, it doesn't matter. You know, I've been the guy at the end of the game that just can't close it out. I went through that period of my career where I just, the last outs are different, and it is harder. It was harder for me, and that was a hump I had to get over myself. And the leadership aspect, you know, I think even if a lot of my teammates were, if you're talking to them too, and in a good way of putting it is, the first 2 years I was in Maple Woods, we were a top 10 team in the country those 2 years. And the first year I think my freshman year, like 45 and 10 or something like that. And the second year we were 30 and 20. And we had a lot more talent the second year, but a lot of it was leadership. And it was just guys that you could lean on in situations when you need to lean on them. And just the character of guys that it wasn't so much didn't buckle under pressure, but just sort of had just sort of like a coolness about them. And I don't know if that's the right word to use, but just like it's cool. We got this. It's fine. But the guys that also buckle down a little harder when the game is on the line and maybe focus a little better. Watching this team is difficult for me because ever since I stopped and kind of walked away from the game and walked away from everything that I was doing in it, I've become very unemotional about how I view the game, because I was so emotional when I was in it. Hmm. And it's hard for me to flip that switch back, because when I look at the Royals, I don't see a very good team. I can't, because offensively they are so bad and they have a lot of pitchers that pitch to a lot of contact, and it's completely opposite of anything that I agree with in baseball and the things that I looked at and players that I recruited and things that I tried to do when I was playing. But damn it, they just don't find a way to win. And it is just a crazy ass feeling, because you're just sitting there going, why is Hosmer swinging those pitches and then he triples off the wall?
Or, and it's like, why
right. And why is Sal seeing two strikes the entire game, but he's swung and missed 11 times? Like, and no one has gotten a hold of this guy and said, stop doing that crap. But it worked in the last inning.
Yeah.
And I've been hearing a lot on the radio recently. You know, I mean, and similar to you, Kevin, on this show a lot, that Mike and I skew more towards that sabermetric side of things and the, you know, give me evidence, show me the numbers, you know, but there is that kind of intangible element to it. And on the radio a lot this week, they've been talking about, you know, sometimes in sports, it just does work out that it's just your time, you know. And I mean, I'm not saying the Royals are going to go out and win the World Series, but I mean, shit, if that ain't what it feels like, you know, it's just it feels like it's their turn. They put in their time, and this is karma coming back around. And I mean, that's really the only way you can explain last night, because you're exactly right. I mean, so many head-scratching moments and just like, what the hell are you doing? I cursed out Sal on Twitter so many damn times in that game, and Gordon was not very good. And I mean, you had so many moments where you're just like, this is it. This is the last straw, and they're broken. They're a broken team. And then, you know, here we are.
They
and
come right
still
back
going.
To it.
It's just, it's unbelievable.
I think I saw a headline on, I think it was Deadspin maybe, and it was like, Royals come back to defeat Athletics, comma, Ned Yost. And that's exactly what it was like that whole game, just watching from the stands. And I mean that's a weird perspective too, because the people in the stands are, you know, they're not the guys usually paying attention to the, you know, the little, I mean, they can be, but they're usually, you know, they're just out there and they want to yell and everything. It's a guy two seats down was yelling at Ned the whole game, you know, no matter what he did. And you know, it's easy to kind of jump on the manager, but there were some really weird and questionable things that they did, and it didn't matter. Like the Royals, despite you giving away five outs, they ended up winning, and not only that, but scored nine runs. You know, despite throwing people into weird situations that they haven't been in from the bullpen, didn't matter. They still did it. And, you know, I don't know what how to explain that. And it's not like that's the first time either. I mean, there's the weird crap like, you know, that Dyson and Gore game that made no sense that they win that way. And
without recording a hit in the final inning.
Just ridiculous. Like, what is going on here?
And you want to talk about first time. I mean, I did hear on the radio that that was quite literally the first time that any team in an elimination game has come from behind three times in the same game and won. Like, I mean, that was a truly historic game. And I caught some of the Mike Socia press conference on the way home when they were asking him about, and they, you know, asked him if you watched the game last night. And even he said, he goes, I started watching that game as a scout. And he goes, I finished watching it as a fan. He goes, that doesn't get any better than that. I mean, this is the manager of the team the Royals are about to face to move on in the playoffs, and even he was kind of tipping his cap to both the A's and the Royals for just having a great game. I mean, it was just an unbelievable top two sporting event in my life that I've ever even witnessed, you know, obviously with one of my teams. But yeah, just from a baseball game perspective, it's probably the best game that I've seen since that game six of the 2011 World Series, which pisses me off to even mention it because the Cardinals ended up winning. But that was one hell of a baseball game when they were down a couple times to the Rangers and David Freese brought them back. But that was the only time where I remember coming away, like in the last few years, thinking, man, that was one hell of a baseball game. And last night totally eclipsed it.
You know, the crazy thing about them coming back three times is it's how they did it. It's that you think team in the playoffs comes back from a 3 or 4 run deficit at its worst.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming back with home runs. They're coming back, right, with, you know, get a guy on and hit a ball out and you come back. And it's so crazy. I had a thought today and then I had to smack myself because, like, you got to stop thinking this way. It's what if the Royals are the new version of Moneyball? I mean, like the whole point of Moneyball wasn't we need guys with walks and power and we value outs. It was just, let's find a way to win that's outside of what everybody else is doing, was trying to find a market inefficiency. What if that's what the Royals are doing? With strikeouts up so dramatically, right, over the last 3 years, maybe they were ahead of the curve. Maybe three years ago they said, hey, this is our path and this is what we need to do. I mean, maybe that is what they did.
I don't remember if it was very Rainey or if it was Joe Paz or somebody, but they were like, the Royals' idea is put it in play and run like hell.
No, it was Rainey. I heard him today.
Was that Rainey?
I left. There's been
so many columns today. So yeah. I can't keep them straight. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I left at lunch and I heard Rainey on 810. And that was word for word what he said. And he even brought up the same point, Kevin, of Moneyball. You know, it's like, you know, if they go to the playoffs eight times in the next 15 years, then maybe we'll declare it the new Moneyball. But I mean, as of right now, it's still a possibility of something where it's like, hey, you know, exactly what you said. It's not necessarily about, you know, walks as much as it is just adding to your probability to win games. And the Royals in their situation, running, stealing bases, doing things like that, is adding to their ability to win the game. I mean, if Dyson doesn't steal third, does he end up scoring? You know, things like that. I mean, how many 7 stolen bases was the most ever in a playoff game, I think?
And tied a record, but tied, I mean, a record, yeah. Okay. I mean, it's been done twice, and I think the last one was like 42 or something.
Yeah, and 5 bunts, which just drove me freaking nuts. But, I mean, hey, I mean, you can't – I mean, it's just amazing how that was – how that worked out. That they,
even when they do bunt, it's stupid to give an away ounce, but you see why they do it. Like, you can understand. Like in the ninth with Willingham, you know, leads off with a single and you're going to pinch run him. You pinch run him is that when Dyson pinch ran?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Super fast dude. You know exactly why they're doing it. Obviously they should have sold in second and sacked him to third instead of the other way around. Right. But
he can't steal third if he doesn't get the
Right. So yeah, one of the tenets of Moneyball and like stealing bases itself is you got to steal it with a 76% clip or whatever it is. And they're 384. Like, as a team, that's incredible. Like, we make fun of Rusty Kuhn so much because of his name and whatnot, but what he does with not only the fielders but the base runners,
mm-hmm,
that's pretty amazing that you have so many guys in this lineup that only steal a large number of bases in context of today's game, but they don't get thrown out at all. And
no, and it's not just speed either. There is an awesome article on Fangraphs today, and they basically broke down that Dyson steal, like pitch by pitch.
I read that. Yeah, after you tweeted out, I read that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That was so cool how he like just pointing out the cues that Sean Doolittle was giving away, and how Dyson clearly was reading it, and what? And used that to, you know, just get the right jump at the right time, and you know, stealing third. It's tough on its own, but when it's a left-handed batter up there, it's hardly ever done because it's clear lane. So,
and when I was coaching, my last year of coaching, it was really when I started to sort of sway away from the sort of baseball industry and moved more towards Moneyball. And I hated bunts and I hated Zach Bunts. But one thing I was told when I was doing it by the coach I was with. At the college level, it's you can't necessarily look at bunting as giving up an out because the fielders are so bad that you never know. It's not an automatic out. Well, in today's baseball in the major leagues, obviously those guys are better fielders, but because there's been so much of an emphasis around don't run and so much of an emphasis around don't give away outs, you can almost see where the Royal style is so much in contrast with everybody else has done because of the way the industry's gone over the last 5 to 8 years. Because they do steal so much, look at their next two matchups if they happen to get there. How many of those catchers are actually good catchers, like good catch and throw guys? Ionetta is more of a catching guy. He's not really that great of a thrower. And then Wieters is no longer in the lineup for the Orioles, and so they have – is it Joseph or whoever? So they have a younger dude there who is a catch and throw guy, but no, those matchups are both great for them. They don't, and it wouldn't be until maybe even Avila, if they didn't facing the Tigers again, that matchup's great for them. And maybe they have a good matchup to where in this next series they can play up this again, where they are a great base running team. And the Angels, from the games that I've seen, I haven't really checked the metrics on them, but I don't think they're a great defensive team either. They don't cover a lot of ground in the outfield because they put Hamilton in the outfield a lot. If that's the case, then the Royals got a good matchup here too.
Yeah, and I mean we talk a lot about the Royals on base percentage being so poor and that being something that's holding them back. But then to continue this discussion of the flip side of that argument, the things that they do really well. I mean they're fourth in all of baseball in batting average, and because I pulled up the numbers here while we were talking about this, they have the most stolen bases by 15. In all of Major League Baseball, they have the most stolen base attempts, and they have the least strikeouts, and they have 130 less strikeouts than the closest team to them, which was Oakland, who walks a lot. I mean, so this heavy emphasis on contact, if regardless of whether you think the emphasis on contact philosophy is correct or not, if you can put that aside and just say, okay, well, the Royals have implemented this philosophy and that's what they've chosen. I mean, when you really break it down, they're damn good at it, which is
if you're going to do something,
crazy.
Be really good at it.
Yeah. So I mean, we've been bagging the Royals for not having the right philosophy, but you know, and I still don't agree with it just from a personal standpoint, but if I'm going to put that aside and look at it, I mean, whatever the philosophy they've chosen, they've implemented it as well as they've wanted, and maybe who knows? Maybe this is why they're having this success this year that's been unprecedented in our lifetimes.
Well, it's one of the things I've gone off and ranted about a number of times over the past however many years is that they early in Dayton Morris' regime and then a lot of Alibert's regime is they were looking at guys so much that were sort of average players, did a lot of things average but not anything really well, that they didn't have a roster built to have, well, this guy's super great defensively, or this guy's got great speed, or this guy's got great power. It was just a bunch of guys that were sort of the same. It was a bunch of David DeJesus's. There was really nothing special. That's kind of who they all were. But this roster now has a bunch of guys. I mean, your outfield defense, the three best outfielders in the major leagues are the three best outfielders on the team. Like, are pretty close to it. Like, the three, you know, Dyson, Kane, Gordon are all top eight outfielders in baseball. Two of the fastest runners in the major leagues are on this team. So they finally have guys where they have specific skills that are close to elite or elite level skills. And I think that says that's something I've always complained about was like stars win you games. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a star like a Mike Trout star. If you have if you have a manager that can implement those stars or implement those star skills well enough, then you can play them up. And 89 wins in the regular season or whatever they finished at, that's usually our benchmark, is a team good or not, and it's how are they doing in the long run. And I guess really there's really no reason to complain anymore, even though I'm probably still going to.
Yeah.
And I mean, and there's always room to complain. So.
Of course. And we'll save that for the second segment on any complaints we have, but about the game, because there are some definitely. And we said it before on this show, we've kind of talked about the Royals as they were leading up towards the playoffs. You know, it's a team that is not built appropriately by most estimations for success over 162 game season, which is why, you know, they were in it till the very end and whether or not they'd make the playoffs. And, but yet again, the flip side of that is with all the running and all the things and being such a short sample size in the playoffs, they are a team that's built to kind of make some noise. Mm-hmm. Because when you look at the playoffs, the teams that succeed usually are the ones that have really good bullpens with good depth. You know, or just out of this world starting pitching, where the pitchers don't even need the bullpen. But I mean, when the Cardinals have their success, they won a couple World Series. I mean, they're using that bullpen constantly. Tony La Russa loved to use the bullpen, and he would do it. And that's the kind of the way this team is built. And then this whole running and stealing bases and being aggressive on the base paths, you know, it's going to come back to bite them more than once in these playoffs. But the hope is that more often than not, it doesn't, and the positives outweigh the negatives. And it's, I mean, I honestly think, and I've thought it for a while, that this team can make some noise in this playoffs here.
Yeah, they always see, I mean, pitching and defense, I mean, it's a cliche that's what's going to win you championships.
But it's a cliche for a reason.
Right. In this kind of, like, in a five-game series, I mean, you know, it's like who blinks in a pitching matchup. And if the mm-hmm. Royals can scrounge together four or five runs, they might have the pitching staff to hold the Angels in a game that maybe they shouldn't have won, or maybe, you know, would have been difficult or less meaningful in June. Well, now, you know, you win that and you're a third of the way to that series. And, you know, I always think about, like, the Brewers a couple of years ago. I think it was 2011 when they made the playoffs, and they, you know, they had Braun and Fielder and Ricky Weeks and all these guys who just slammed the ball over the fence, and they got to the playoffs and they hit like three homers in a series, not even that. They hit maybe one homer in a five-game series and they were gone. You know, and just because you can specialize so much in the playoffs, you can play matchups so much, and just, you know, it's the end of a big long season. It's the weather is cooler, and I know those are handy excuses for Royals broadcasters, but you know, the offense does generally seem to go down in the playoffs. So if you've got a team like the Royals who they're used to not scoring runs, well, shoot, you know, maybe that does play into them. I think they're a pretty dangerous team just because they do. I mean, they've got five pitchers who give you six innings most days, and you can get to that bullpen with Frazier and Finnegan on top of Herrera, Davis, and Holland. I mean, that's a pretty solid group. And if they use Duffy out of the bullpen, there's another big power arm that they can go to. And you've got some platoon advantages, too. So mm-hmm. they match up really well from that regard. It's they just have to, you know, go do it. A couple things, though, like speed, you know, generally doesn't slump. Defense generally doesn't slump, though the Royals, you know, they did have that stretch over a couple weeks in the beginning of September. But you know, for the most part, those things can stay pretty constant, barring somebody being hurt or, you know, a big personnel switch that, you know, puts a different team on the field.
Think about you having Dyson and Gore as your weapons off the bench late underneath the pinch run. And that's why, even though
you're guaranteed to have them on base if you're pinch
right,
running.
Exactly. So it's
perfect deployment of them.
Dyson should never start in the playoffs. It's one of those crazy things where it's almost like the pitcher reliever argument. And do you really want to waste Dyson's defense and his speed for potential three at bats for just a pinch running role in the late innings? Probably. With the way this roster is built and the way they play their games, you got to think they're going to be within a run or two plus or minus coming into the seventh or eighth inning. And if you're playing for that, those two off the bench, with, like we've talked about before, with the way the game is geared now, those two are massive weapons to come off and put some pressure on the defense. And even if you are pinch running them, fine. They're on second base, and they can steal third, or they can steal second. But like, they can do so many things with those guys on the bases that no other team has that luxury to do that. And it's
those are pretty special
weapons.
You can turn a Josh Willingham walk into a double or a triple.
It's really funny to think how much of an impact Terrence Gore might actually have in these playoffs without ever actually taking an at bat or playing in the field. I mean, he could end up scoring, you know, 3, 4, 5 runs, depending on how far the Royals go, with, you know, 4, 5, 6 stolen bases. Who knows? And, you know, never have an at bat, never see a pitch, never catch a fly ball. I mean, it's crazy to think about his bat or his glove or anything. Seriously. Well, I heard something. I can't remember. I saw it on Twitter. I don't know if it was true or not, where it was something where they called up Terrence Gore or whatever, and they were basically like, don't even bring your glove or something. Like, and I'm sure, I doubt it was, they actually told him that, but maybe, maybe it was even something where it was kind of a joke from the manager or something. But
I do find it funny that every time he pinch runs, he has batting gloves in his hands.
I know. I noticed that. That's,
I mean, is that like a thing to keep them clutched so that he's not like extending his fingers and breaking something?
That's what I'd always heard.
You slide, put your hand on the ground, you just scuff your hand up or something like that.
Yeah,
and Scoba, I wanted to get your opinion on this. I said on this show last week, before we even knew that they were a lock for the playoffs, I mentioned Brandon Finnegan, and I said, you know, because we everybody's been really impressed with what he's done, and I was like, you know, I really think that just from what I've seen from him, he looks calm on the mound. You could throw him in there in the playoffs, and I don't think he'd be overwhelmed, even though he was just in college 3 months ago. And I said I thought one of the big things was that he pitched in the College World Series, which is a big, high-pressure, you know, big-time moment, and he did well. He performed well there, so that could kind of carry over. He's basically the only, you know, one of the few people on this team that has is the closest to anything like that is even comparable. So, you know, from your perspective, being a player and a pitcher and that kind of, I mean, is that, and he mentioned it, and when asked about it today, that he drew some comparisons to help himself calm. But I mean, is that, how legit is that as far as an attitude, as something that can help for, you know, not only someone like Brandon Finnegan, but now that this team has had this game in this moment, can help them kind of going through the rest of the playoffs here?
I think it's huge, because it's no different than anything else. It's sort of like a micro level 10,000 hours rules, that the more you do something, the easier it becomes. And it is true. The more you pitch in big games, the easier it becomes. The more you pitch in front of crowds, the easier it becomes. I don't think it matters that much whether it was in the College World Series versus Major League Baseball. From once you're actually there, the context around it doesn't really matter. It's more of like what's going on in the moment, and if there's that many people in the stands that are all watching you, that's really all that matters at that point. So I think it's huge for him. I think it's huge for everybody else too, because you look around the roster, what did they say? Only Ibanez and Infante, only two guys that have had playoff experience, like an inning and playoff experience. Or Shields. Like Shields too.
Shields and Davis, right? Davis. So yeah, so four players.
Or five guys of the 25.
And Ibanez is the 25th player on the, well, Jason Nick's probably the 25th, but 24th player on the bench. So
right, and it only... it's only going to help them out, because it does become easier, and you tend to, well, it's like a quarterback in the NFL. Once you get them in there, and the game slows down for you as time goes on, I think it's the same thing that goes on in front of crowds like that, because it's not so much the worry or the buildup of the circumstance of, oh my God, this is playoff baseball. It's more about the crowd that's watching you. It's more of like who, you know, how many eyes are on you at once. That's the issue. And once you're used to that, or once you've been in front of it a couple times, it does tend to get easier.
And is there also anything to maybe the flip side of that too? If they just since they haven't been there, they don't know any better, and they just, you know, hey, let's just go out and kind of get after it. I mean, just is that something too?
I've never really believed in that, because I always think preparation. It's like the idea of like paralysis by analysis is dumb. It's, I want all the information I can get possible. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, just the guys themselves, I think if you have enough guys in the team that are sort of like they're a little full of themselves, which there are a few guys in this Royals team that are a little full of themselves.
Right.
I think they're a little better than they are. There's a first baseman I have in mind. And it's not the big first baseman. It's the tall one. Yeah, I don't think it matters that much to them. It just sort of, I'm this is what I do. I'm here for this. And, you know, I think this is where James Shields does help with the guy that's been in it before. It does help when you have a guy on your team that's going to take the arrows for you, that can help you relax a little bit. And the one that's going to be, he's going to be the focus. All that we're going to hear in the playoffs is the Will Myers trade. And yeah. How many times we've got to listen to somebody say, oh, well, they traded Will Myers for this guy, and what a big asset that James Shields has been to this team. And, oh, they traded Will Myers for him. And we're going to hear about that a lot. And I think it's beneficial to the rest of the guys in the team that all the focus and attention will be probably on James Shields and how they changed the course of the franchise with that trade. So I think that matters a ton for the guys, especially the ones that don't have experience in the situation, that they can kind of stand behind him and just sort of let him be their shield for be their shield for the next 11 wins.
And if you looked at your Donald Ventura, when he came in after he gave up that 3-run home run, and if they took him out, you know, basically the first person to talk to him in the dugout, you know, besides like, hey, keep your head up, just the cliche stuff, was James Shields. Looked like he was giving him a, you know, not like a scolding or anything, but a really, you know, nice little pep talk, like, you know, you're going to get past this, blah, 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 that type of a thing. And then kind of the opposite, but the same deal with Brandon Finnegan after doing so well. He comes in the dugout, and you saw James Shields, you know, take him by the shoulder and basically just like, you know, really pump him up and be, you know, get him to you know, kind of buy into his own success, if you will, and keep it going. So that, I mean, that's a great point, because you definitely saw, you always question, you know, how much these leadership things actually matter, and how much is people just think James Shields should be a leader, so they call him one. But I mean, I think he definitely showed it last night. Yeah, exactly. But he definitely showed it last night. James Shields did, and he's kind of been, especially once, he seems kind of reserved. You don't seem to necessarily hear a ton of quotes from James Shields, at least throughout the season, at least that I can really think of. Nothing that really stands out too much. But it seems like ever since they've kind of grabbed this playoffs, he's kind of stepped up and really been the voice of the team, he and Alex Gordon too. So it's definitely good to see, because I do agree. I think they're going to need that going forward. And if what you said is right, and he can step up and be that quote unquote shield for these guys, then that, I mean, hey, whatever they need to do is fantastic by me.
Right.
So Kevin, how much time you got here with us?
I got a roll. The Giants game's getting ready to start, and I'm on baby duty, so Sarah can watch the Giants play.
Well, okay, that's a good time to take a break, then.
Yep.
There you go.
All right. Well, so if you're going to jump off, then thanks for joining us, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Go Royals.
Absolutely, man. We'll have to have you on again in this playoff run. Hopefully, we'll have plenty of time to do it.
Well, what are we predicting for the series here?
Oh man!
After last night, I don't even know if I can try and predict anything with any certainty.
It's true.
Have the Angels released their matchups yet? Are there their starters?
We
know Weaver. Right?
It's Weaver in Game 1, Shoemaker in Game 2, and CJ Wilson in Game 3.
Wilson hasn't been pitching that well.
That's what I heard. Saying. In all those matchups, those aren't bad matchups for the Royals, because you don't have a ton of swing and miss guys there anyway. Wilson's the only one that really has a lot of swing and miss stuff, but he's so, well, he's, how would you say, he's so wild, but not like that matters for the Royals.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I mean, but
it's still a hittable ball.
Right. And Jared Weaver, I mean, you look at his numbers, they're pretty comparable to a Jason Vargas, even though obviously he didn't finish the season quite as poorly as Vargas did. And even Jeremy Guthrie's not that far away from a Jared Weaver. So, yeah, I mean, the matchups aren't as, at least from a pitching standpoint, aren't as bad as you would think. It's just the offense that is a complete mismatch.
No Garrett Richards really changes the whole scope of their entire postseason run. Without him, it changes a lot of stuff for them. Yeah, I don't know. I said this to Lesky when I was, you know, the Ouija chat during the day. I kind of said, you know, if they get past the A's, the Royals get past the A's, those are some pretty good matchups the rest of the way. Even if it's the Orioles, that's probably the one that scares me the most, because their defense is so good, and it would maybe mitigate all the contact the Royals are going to put in play. But none of their starters are that good. Like, so you don't really...
They're missing Weeders and,
right,
and Machado
and Machado.
I think Machado's Davis not back yet. Yeah.
And Davis is going to play third base, which have fun with that with the Royals speed.
Big
and then
target.
Obviously, we have the Tigers to go up against, but you know, I don't really think that team scares me a whole lot. I know they've
kind of crapped themselves all year against them.
Right. It's not really been, well, oh gosh, this Tigers team is so good. I think we have
the Royals have played poorly.
Right. It's like, I don't want to be too optimistic about it, because it's one of those things where
I don't know, it's
taken so long to get here. Do you really want to be that guy that goes, okay, well, now it's our turn?
Yeah.
But
but it is something where if they can get past the Angels here, and even if it is the Tigers, I mean, Tigers in the ALCS is a completely different feeling, I would imagine, if you're a player, than Tigers in July. Because you've got the confidence of not winning the wild card game, then you would have beaten the Angels, who are the best team in all of baseball, and you're looking to really make this thing happen. So I think the mindset completely changes, and that plays into the Royals' favor, I got to think.
Right. I think obviously you got to steal one of the first two. So you got to get lucky with Captain Contact with Vargas, or maybe Ventura turns back into what he was, you know, the first 10 starts of the year. I don't know. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
I'm not going to be able to handle it at all, but...
Oh, man.
No.
Especially not if there's another game like last night. Good Lord.
No way.
All right. Well, Kevin, thanks again for joining us. Appreciate it. Yes. And you have a nice night.
Will do. See you on the Twitters.
Indeed. Yep. All right. So with that, we're gonna take a break, and we will be right back with more. And we've started off with the positive, but we're going to flip to maybe a little bit of the negative from last night that we'll have to fix going forward. So we'll hit that up after the break. So stick around, and we'll see you on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. This weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us through the break. And we've still got plenty of baseball to talk about from this one just amazing game. And we highlighted a bunch of the positive and some of the positive moving forward with this Royals team. But it wasn't all positive. You don't give up 8 runs and go to 12 innings and get behind 7-3. Without some faux pas, if you will, and a couple of major ones from Ned Yost, believe it or not, you know, I'm sure most of you are shocked at this point, but let's kind of tackle these one at a time. And the biggest one, in my opinion, is sixth inning. James Shields had gotten off to a slightly rocky start to the game. Gave up a 2-run home run in the first inning, which was just deflating, just awfully deflating. The Royals battle back, take the lead, and James Shields starts cruising a little bit, has a couple good innings, and gets into the sixth and has a little bit of trouble. Puts two guys on base. And at that point, this is with no outs. And at that point, Ned Yost decides that he's going to pull Shields in the sixth and bring in a reliever, which if you pull people, I think 95% are going to say no real problem with pulling Shields in that scenario. It's playoffs. It's do or die. If you don't think James Shields has it, and he was struggling and battling at different points, he had 88 pitches through five, which isn't a ton, but it's not a ton either.
Right.
So Ned Yost made the decision to pull him. I was fine with pulling him. But then, you know, between a Brandon Finnegan or a Danny Duffy or a Jeremy Guthrie or, in the sixth inning, even a Kelvin Herrera, someone like that, you know, all those choices, and he brings in Yordano Ventura, who pitched 2 days prior on Sunday and didn't even have the best outing then, but brings him in to pitch in a situation that he's quite literally never been in before. He's only had one relief appearance in the major leagues, and he didn't have any inherited runners. So he comes in with two runners on in this position, and immediately, three pitches in or whatever it was, gives up a three-run home run to none other than the same guy who hit the two-run home run earlier, Brandon Moss. So now the Royals, after battling back to be up 3-2, are down 5-3. And this is a problem. So
big problem, yeah.
Yeah, for this team where you thought if they could get three runs, they might be able to win. And then if you would have said a game James Shields is what I was thinking, a game John Lester started and the Royals had to get six runs to win, you'd have just said, okay, let's pack it up and let's go.
Yeah,
you know, the way the Royals have played against Lester, and then it even took even more. But that's beside the point for this particular part of the discussion. I mean, and Pedro Martinez on the postgame show just eviscerated Ned Yost for what he did here. And it you know, people have called Yordano Ventura kind of a slight – there was some rumors that the Royals around the organization had called him Mini Pedro because he reminded a lot of people of Pedro Martinez, and people didn't kind of want to get that out because you didn't want to put that in the kid's head or anything, which is fine. But so I don't know if Pedro Martinez maybe even sees a little bit of himself in that pitcher in Yordano Ventura, and so he wants to, you know, he kind of felt bad, and they even showed a couple flashbacks, one to the 2003 ALCS against the Yankees, in which Pedro Martinez was brought in a similar scenario in a relief role and gave up a hit that scored a couple runs. They ended up losing that game. And then they showed a clip of that. And then Martinez even brought up another thing the following year in 04, he said, where it was a similar situation where he was brought in and gave up runs also, even though they ended up winning the World Series that year. But that's, you know, so Martinez was obviously taking this very personally, and he just destroyed Ned Yost. He's like, this is not on Yordano Ventura. This is Ned Yost's fault. That was a stupid move. He goes, it was absolutely dumb. He should not have done it. And then they flipped to Ned Yost's press conference when they asked that question about why he put Yordano Ventura in there. And then after Yost gave his answer, which was, you know, oh, well, we had a pitching plan that we decided for this eventuality, and that was the point where we said Yordano was going to go in, and he was ready, so we put him in, more or less. That's what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said. And then they flip back to Martinez in the studio, and he just went nuts even further. He's just like, that is a completely unacceptable answer. He's like, that's a stupid answer, blah, blah, blah. And it was awesome to finally see some national media just kind of ripping Ned Yost. But, you know, more than that, it was right. And, you know, if you want to question putting a rookie in a relief role, you know, that's one part of the discussion. And I would say don't do it. But if he's going to do that, okay. Then if you want to say, okay, bringing him in the middle of an inning, I would say don't do it. But if he's going to do that, you know, okay, he's going to do that. But then, not only that, but then you say, okay, well, do you want to bring him in as a reliever in the middle of an inning with men on base, and it's just a situation he's not used to? If you're gonna bring him in as a middle reliever or as a reliever in the game, you know, give him a fresh inning. Give him give him empty bases, let him do his, just let him mental, mental standpoint, let him think it's a start and move from there. And he comes in, he didn't look comfortable, and it didn't take long for Moss to send a 3-run shot and it was over. And the inning was obviously not the game, but it was just kind of, it was over for Yordano Ventura. And like I said, I saw James Shields kind of trying to give him a pep talk, trying to keep his head up. And from what I've seen from Yordano Ventura this year, he's very calm beyond his years to me on the mound. Doesn't seem to get rattled. He looked rattled last night, but right. He doesn't seem to get rattled. And he doesn't seem to. And I think when he's a starter and he's in that zone, I think he'll be fine. And I'm not worried about him moving forward. Maybe just in a tiny spot in the back of my head, but I think he's going to be fine. I think he's got the moxie to get over it. But I hated that call and wanted Finnegan right there. But Munoz didn't go that way. And Mike, when you're at the ballpark, when you see what's going on, you can't always – I don't know where you were, if you can see in the bullpen or something. You can't always see, though. And so you're like, okay, pulling James Shields. I mean, what's going through your head when he's pulling James Shields? And then when you see it's Ventura come in, then where did you go from there?
Well, I mean, I was on the third base side in the upper deck, so I had a direct view right into the bullpen. It was pretty clear. And that inning started, Shields gives up a broken bat single. That's, not much to get worked up about. It felt like, and I haven't really looked at any of the game footage beyond highlights, but it seemed like he was missing just barely on the strike zone. It seemed like there were a lot of close calls from my vantage point, but that's, it's tough to see when you're coming from the side.
That's what it looked like on TV.
Yeah. So it seemed like, gives up a broken bat single, walks the next guy on a pretty close pitch. It doesn't seem like that's much to get worked up about. I wasn't too terribly, I wasn't going crazy because they pulled Shields, because like you said, it's do or die. If guy doesn't have it, you got to go to someone else. But at the same time, it's also like, this is why you traded for the guy, is to get through situations like this one. And so that was a little confusing, but even more so was, going with Ventura, because we saw him throwing and there was nobody else throwing in there. So it was really curious because he had just thrown 2 days before. And so a lot of us, we were thinking, there's no way he's putting him in. And then
a lot of people were saying he was just getting his side work in.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I think I saw that on Twitter, and I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. They'll get someone up, because at the same time, it was also Sam Fold coming up, lefty. Josh Donaldson was up. He's a righty. And then it was Moss, who's a lefty, and a lefty specialist, like an extreme platoon split kind of guy. And Josh Reddick, another lefty after that. And then Jed Lowrie, a switch hitter. So you were going to get, 4 out of 5 guys batting from the left-hand side. So if you're going to warm someone up, I would think that would be Finnegan or Duffy's spot, because Duffy's just death to left-handed hitters. He has relieved in the past, earlier in the year before he joined the rotation. He was a relief pitcher, and they used him in that kind of spot as a fireman. He's been in that spot where he's come in with runners on in the middle of an inning. So I was really confused why they didn't do that. It seemed like a really obvious move to just get through that inning, and then you can pass it off to Herrera, Davis, and Holland. And then even further is, you've got, I read this in Joe Sheehan's newsletter. He broke down this decision. If you're looking at James Shields and two batters is his short leash, then why even start him in the fifth or in the sixth? Why not just start somebody else?
Yeah.
Bring him in there. And, it's interesting, because there was an article on Fangraphs that yesterday morning about, bullpen strategies and things like that. And, really talking about the times through the order that a starting pitcher will go through, and how, but the first and second, most of them can get through. But once you get to the third time through, it's an issue. It can be an issue. Fourth time through, almost every starter has problems, because, fatigue, plus just you run out of things to show people, and they know what you're throwing that day. So, it's just difficult on a starting pitcher. And so that would be another argument to, you know, give him a short leash and just be like, look, you got 15 outs. We can get the next 12. You've got Finnegan, Duffy. You've got, you know, Herrera, Davis, Holland. All of those guys available right there. There's, you know, they just came off an off day. They have today off, win or lose. There was very little reason to not, you know, just either ride Shields out or, you know, just go with somebody else. But even further was like, okay, Herrera or Ventura comes in, gives up the homer, gets the guy out, and then they go to Herrera. So it's like, if you were ready to go with Herrera in the sixth, why didn't you just, why wasn't he the guy?
Yeah.
And it's just like, what, you know, not only are you, you're taking a guy in, it's just ironic because for a guy like Yost who has been so strict on those back three guys and their roles, and this is this guy's inning. He's the seventh inning guy. He's the eighth inning guy. He's the ninth inning guy. And now you take a starting pitcher, you put him in a playoff spot, coming in with runners on. It goes completely against, you know, his pattern, and it just makes me think that he had not really an idea what he was doing. I think he saw an opportunity to get a big arm in there, but I mean, Herrera's got a big arm. He can hit 100. Why not bring him in? It was really confusing, you know, just watching it. Like, you could see it. It's like, you know, it's somebody carrying a big tray of full glasses, and you can see they're going to drop them. You know it's coming, and you can't get there in time to stop it. And it just, you know, there's a big mess, and that's exactly what it was. It was a big mess. So, yeah, I mean, I think he should get ripped for that. And when you look at Yost, one of the key things in Milwaukee that was questionable, and one of the things that we've seen watching him as Royals manager is just bullpen usage. And when he chooses to go with guys, and how sometimes there are these very strict roles that he won't get out of, and then how sometimes it seems just really arbitrary and like there's no plan at all. And last night, at least in that point, there was no plan at all. Once they got through that, I mean, it was a little more by the numbers, but still, I mean, that's something to be concerned about going forward, because in a situation like this where you've got, you know, 5 games or 7 games to play with, well, you know, one bad inning can sink it. You know, they're not going to be able to get away with giving up 5 runs to the Angels regularly.
No, you know, they're just not going to work. It'll probably be more than 5 runs.
Yeah, I mean, you you can't do it. And it was just really weird. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of problems with the rest of his bullpen usage through the day, but
right,
that particular decision right there would have been it. That would have been, you know, he got booed on the way out. To make the change, he got booed on the way back to the dugout. He got booed when he made the next change. I mean, it was just, you know, that was going to be his legacy. That was going to be the thing. And I kind of feel bad for him, but it's tough to, you know.
Yeah, only a little. I caught some of Jeff Passan on 610 on the way home, and he said it was Danny Parkins doing the interview, and Parkins asked him, you know, what was your article going to be if the Oakland A's had won? And Passan, without hesitating, said, you know, that Ned Yost should have been fired. And just because of, and Passan thought that Yordano Ventura being put in was the biggest blunder. And it seemed to me like Yost was thinking of it from a kind of in a vacuum, like from the theoretical perspective of, okay, you need to get some outs here, and you've got all your bullpen arms, but you've also got this electric young starting pitcher who, well, if he's a starter, he can certainly be a reliever, and it shouldn't be a big deal. Just bring him in, and it'll be just the same. But he didn't think about it organically, looking at the matchups, looking at the game, and how Yordano Ventura had just pitched a couple of days before, how the game was developing, what had happened. Him being a rookie, it just seemed like he overlooked all those things. For someone who is usually so cognizant of the players and trying to protect them, I mean, we've seen him pull James Shields and or leave him in with the intention of simply getting a win, you know, just a pitcher win for someone like James Shields. So he's normally very cognizant of those things in order to try and protect his players. So it just, not only was it odd from a baseball perspective, but just odd from a Ned Yost perspective, because it seemed inconsistent with how he typically would try and protect his players while at the same time somewhat consistent with his rigid belief in Herrera gets the seventh, Davis gets the eighth, Holland gets the ninth, and that's it. You know, so which is dumb because after Ventura got shelled, he went ahead and brought in Herrera anyway. And then after Herrera finished out the sixth inning, he brought him back out for the seventh. So, hey, guess what?
Yeah.
He can actually pitch more than one inning. Oh, my freaking Lord. Can you believe it? This is insane. Who would have thought that a reliever can pitch more than one inning in the playoffs? I didn't know those were – I thought that was against the rules.
But I'm sure there's going to be a rule change coming in shortly.
That's just – it shouldn't be allowed.
It's crazy talk.
It shouldn't be allowed. I mean, if you did the sixth inning, if you had no outs in the sixth inning and you brought in Kelvin Herrera, I mean, then instead of asking Herrera, Davis, and Holland to get three outs, you're asking them all to get four. You're asking for one additional out per pitcher is all you're doing. If you, what kind of a shutdown bullpen is this supposed to be if you don't have faith that they can get you those one additional outs? I do. Everyone else in baseball does, but for whatever reason, I don't even know if it's necessarily that Ned Yost doesn't have faith, but he doesn't want to put his pitcher in that position. It just, it's such an, I don't understand his reasoning for these things before. I mean, if I'm a manager, even if I'm a quote unquote player's manager like Yost, I'm going in there and I'm telling every single one of those players,
be ready.
Hey, I don't care. Whatever you need to be ready at the drop of a hat to do whatever you need to do to help this team win, because I will call on you and I will not hesitate. And the expectation is that you're going to come through. This is the playoffs. There's no more excuses. There's no more he's too young. We're getting experience, a young team. Bullshit. It's all done. It's all, we're in the playoffs now. You proved your big boys. So put on your big boy pants and play. And that's what needs to happen. And Ned Yost, he just hasn't done it. Or if, I mean, he just, at least he didn't show it last night. And I mean, I guess if you want to give him credit, you can give him credit for Brandon Finnegan. I mean, he put him in more out of necessity, but he kept him in because Finnegan was freaking rolling.
He was dealing. Yeah.
We didn't really talk about that in the first half of the show, but Mike, I mean, we talked in the context of his mentality.
Yeah.
And how much that helped, but just his stuff was just flipping nasty. I mean, Brandon Moss had by the time he faced Finnegan, he had three at-bats, two home runs, and one just screamer line drive that Hosmer had to leap in the air to catch and prevent the game from getting out of control even earlier than it did. And Brandon Finnegan came in and just set him up and sat him down. I mean, it was unbelievable to watch him work. And I am just so excited to see him as a starting pitcher next year.
The way he's kind of started his career is, you know, his first, like, 10 batters, he got Derek Jeter, Jacoby Ellsbury, David Ortiz. And
the dude's fearless.
Yeah, I mean, just all these different guys, like Beltran, you know, just the names that he's ticked off. It's just crazy. And it's like there was a quote in some story. I don't know what story. There's a billion of them, which is awesome.
Yes.
But he was like, this is, you know, they asked him, how'd you get through it? He's like, well, I've done this 1,000 times in college. I guess this is 1,001. It's like, that's just so refreshing to see
a
Royals player do that and not crap their pants. And you just come out and immediately just, you know, be better than you ever expect. So that was awesome. I mean, he was a key player of the game. It's, you know, I know we want to be negative in this segment. It's really tough too, because it was an awesome win, but like Christian Colon got things done too. I mean, it wasn't a good hit. It wasn't a screamer, but he made contact. He made it work. And so you're looking at two rookies getting, you know, significant moments, and that's, you know, that can't hurt anybody really, you know, the rest of this period or, you know, in the next year. So I think that's, I don't know. I mean, there's just so much about this game. It was just awesome. You can pick apart.
And, but to stick with Yost.
Let's stick with Yost.
Then we'll, yes. The other, big blunder that Yost had was this strangely weird double steal fake Billy Butler stealing a base attempt thing. So after the Royals had, Billy Butler had actually hit a single to make it 2-1. And Hosmer was on third.
Butler on first, Hosmer on third.
It was 2-1 though, right? They hadn't tied it up at this point?
Right.
So it's 2-1. Yeah, so two outs, Gordon at the plate, Butler on first, Hosmer third. And all of a sudden, you turn around and Butler's caught in a rundown. John Lester steps off the mound, throws to second, and then they come back, you know, they start going to Butler. And then all of a sudden, Hosmer's breaking for home, and they throw the ball to home plate. And Giovanni Soto was in at catcher there. And actually, fortunately for the Royals, injured himself on this play and had to leave the game. But they throw it to him, and he tags out Hosmer, and the inning's over. And everyone's just, what the hell happened?
Well, yeah, like, why?
Yeah, and it was everyone's railing on Billy Butler because it looked like he had just been caught daydreaming.
But as just it turns, wondering, yeah. Just...
Right, but as it turns out, when you went back and looked at the replay, he was having an involved discussion with Rusty Koontz, the first base coach, as Lester was, you know, getting set to try and pitch. And you obviously couldn't tell what they were talking about, but we find out that it's basically Koontz is saying, hey, we're going to try this double steal thing, and just as soon as Lester heads towards home plate, go towards second. And it looked like there was some sort of miscommunication where all Butler really heard was the just go part. And so he turns around and just starts running. But Lester was just set, and he hadn't moved towards home plate yet. So he just steps off.
He's just staring at him.
And so no one was sure what happened. And they actually interviewed Ned Yost in-game, in between innings. And Yost admitted, he's like, yeah, that was a play that we wanted to try, and it didn't work out. You know, we wanted to Butler to wait a little longer, blah, 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 and he went too soon, and it didn't work out. And so everyone was saying, well, it was a bad call on Yost to try and do it, or they were saying that Butler screwed up and it was on him. Well, turns out it was both. Turns out it was a dumb call that Ned Yost was legitimately trying to do, and then Butler screwed it up as well by going too soon. And I don't actually know that I necessarily hate that call. Sometimes you can sneak that in there and make that work. So I don't know. I could make
a justification for it because exactly. It's very much in Little League and high school, it's much more because you're forcing the players to make a play.
Right.
For one. And in this case, it's Lester who never throws to first. Like, literally. I don't think he's thrown to first once all season.
Not once.
And maybe twice in the last 2 years. So you're taking a guy who you're pretty sure isn't going to throw for whatever reason. I don't know if it's a mental block that he has on it or he just doesn't feel like he needs to do it. But you're getting to a point where you're trying to get them to be caught up, trying to get him and let Hosmer make a break for it and get a good enough jump. I guess there's also an element of surprise because who the heck would ever expect Billy Butler to be stealing with Alex Gordon at the plate?
And that was my biggest problem with it. It wasn't necessarily the call itself. It was, again, looking at it organically in the context of the game, the call at that point with Billy Butler on first and Alex Gordon, the guy who a month ago was getting MVP chance. And yeah, he struggled quite a bit since then. But, he's still your star, your best player. And he's at the plate with two outs. You gotta place the expectation that he's gonna come through for you. And instead, Yost is pussyfooting around with all this double steal sneak one in crap with Billy Butler on. When, you know, I think the idea is that maybe even if the run, I mean, granted there were two outs, so it really wouldn't matter. But even if the it doesn't work that you can get the run in at home, then maybe you can still advance somebody to second base or something like that. So, but you know, with Billy Butler, I mean, what are you thinking?
It's crazy.
It was perplexing at the very least.
It's a play that would probably have been better if somebody was at the bottom of the order or if they had Escobar at the plate so that even if you don't get it, you at least, you know, you're leading off your regular leadoff guy or.
Yeah.
Even later in the game when you're trying to play for one run, I mean, it's really risky, but I mean, at least, you know, you're not running yourself out of a potential big inning. I mean, Gordon could have ripped a double down the line. I mean, based on his at-bats against Lester, he probably wouldn't have, but, you know, you still get that opportunity that he might put something in play And then not only are you not making the third out, but you're, you know, you scored some runs and you can keep going. So
yeah, and
it's just so weird.
And that's, and these two things are not even talking about the five bunts that were laid down by the Royals,
yeah,
at the behest of the bunt master himself, Ned Yost. And it's hilarious. Somebody posted an old baseball card of Ned Yost from the 70s or whatever, where he's squaring a bunt. Good Lord.
Yeah.
But I mean, and, you know, Scobie kind of touched on this where, you know, the proper, or not necessarily the proper, but a mindset that if you're going to bunt, the mindset that you have to have is not that you're giving up an out, but that you're legitimately trying to get a hit with someone who can make it happen, like a Dyson or whoever. And, you know, I'll listen to that argument, even if I don't necessarily agree. But, I mean, it just, like, it was deja vu for, like, three innings in a row.
Lead-off hit,
bunt him over to second base, get him to third with another sacrifice, strand him with two outs. I mean, it happened legitimately three times in the last five innings. And each time, it could have won the damn game. Well, no, that's not true. Two times it could have won the game. One in the eighth inning, it would have tied it.
Yeah, and then they finally did tie it in the ninth.
In the Dyson one.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was just a situation where it's just so many bunts, good Lord, and they, I mean, varying success, I suppose. And then it was just irony of ironies that the when the Royals had lost the lead in the 12th inning, and then to get it back and score Hosmer from third, it was what amounted to a swinging bunt by Christian Colon, of all people, who had come in and who actually had laid down a bunt in the previous two innings before, had laid down a good sack bunt that amounted to nothing. And then this time he does a swinging bunt, a chopper that doesn't make it to the pitching mound, but bounces 20 feet in the air. And Brandon Moss, or
Donaldson at third.
Josh Donaldson, tried to barehand it and make a play on it and hit it to home to tag Hosmer out before scoring the tying run, and he misplayed it. And I mean, that's, and then Colon is safe at first, how did he get to second base?
They pitched out and Norris dropped it.
Pitch out and Norris just dropped it. So he gets to second base safely. And then Sal Perez's double ends the game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just a unbelievable turn of events that, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I buy into the it's your time thing, and sometimes I'm too steeped in the numbers to think like it just doesn't happen that way. You know, the good teams usually win. But then again, that's at the beginning of the show why I said I hated baseball playoffs, because that doesn't necessarily always happen. You know, I mean, the A's have been the best team in the league multiple times over the last decade and a half and haven't amounted to much for them.
Yeah.
And so
their stuff doesn't work in the playoffs.
Nope. The very reason why the A's philosophy doesn't work in the playoffs is why the Royals philosophy just might. And
so freaking weird.
It is. I mean,
I'm not complaining, but it's just like I don't. It's such foreign territory that I don't really know. But I don't know what's going on, because you look at it, even just weird stuff throughout the year. That, you know, that Dyson Gore game. I've never seen anything like that. There's that game where Eric Kratz came in because Sal hurt his knee, and then he hits two homers and they win the game by his second homer being the difference. You know, all these different things that just keep...
Liam Hendricks' spot start, where his spot start for six innings.
Jordana Ventura has, you know, comes out and it's, we feel like he's got to have Tommy John surgery and he's fine. Danny Duffy seems like his shoulder's wrecked. He's fine. Or
Sal Perez might have a knee injury, keep him fine out for a long time. He's fine.
You know, you got all these weird things that just have worked. And, you know, even it's been really messy and sloppy. It's okay. I mean, I'm going to go back to the bunts, though. There were a couple of different things. I think Fangraphs had something, and I think Ion Sports from CBS had something looking at each of the bunts and trying to look at like win expectancy and comparing, you know, different situations. And the general idea is they're a little torn, but a couple of the bunts are kind of excusable. The one that got Dice into second, and there was one later that I think it was tied. I don't remember which one they explained, but there's so many bunts to go through that. But I mean, you know, it's not a good thing. Like you look at which game was it? I think it was against the Tigers where Aoki bunted a couple times in the first two innings.
Oh yeah,
you know that's the kind of bunt. That's the kind of thing where with Ned, that's where the bad reputation comes from, because it's an automatic reaction. It's not, you know, it's based on the exact situation right there in front of him and not like the bigger picture. You know, it's okay, we have first and second, I'm going to bunt now. And so he bunts rather than right. saying, hey, look, it's only the second inning. This guy just went on a tear of going like 15 for 18. We can play for a big inning because it's early. You know, and then he still bunts anyway, you know. But really, they only have 30 sacrifice bunts this year, which seems very low. But it's when you do them. I mean, if each of those 30 bunts is in a poor situation, then it doesn't. You know, that's one too many in each case. So, you know, I think it was a little superfluous last night. And when you're looking at a playoff game, those are outs. You know, I mean, there's the argument to be made that you want to make them make the play, but at the same time, most of those weren't like drag bunts where they're trying to, you know, be on the move a little bit and put it in a spot. It's, you know, almost willfully giving it up.
Yeah, straight sacrifices.
And so, I mean, there you're just giving up an out. And, you know, the Earl Weaver school of thought is that you've got 27 outs and they're precious and you protect them like crazy. And that, you know, it's a little frustrating to see it. It did work, so you know it's. I guess it's tough to argue with the results, but it could have went a very, very different way.
Yes, and one thing we'll call this a positive sandwich show here.
Yeah,
and we did some positive, and then some negative here, and then now we'll kind of end with some positive here, and just some reflections overall. And for me, and then something about the last game. First of all, I've probably been the most outspoken on this show in terms of my distaste for Dayton Moore and or Ned Yost and how they run this organization. But that being said, two things. First of all, I want to say that I do feel really good for Dayton Moore and Ned Yost because, you know, when we were at Kelly's on Friday night, which, by the way, this weekend, another Friday when the Royals in the playoffs, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people at Kelly's there. It was absolutely unbelievable. So much fun last
they
Friday.
Were excellent hosts. Of
yes.
Us
Kelly's always excellent hosts.
Crazy, rowdy bunch. They let Danny Parker bring in like 8 bottles of champagne
yes.
from the market down the street.
Yes.
Because they don't serve it there. And he's like, all right, that's fine. I mean, they get it. They're Royals fans there. And they were happy to have, you know, a full house. Yeah. And so, you know, it was an awesome, awesome night.
Yeah. And they were really appreciative that everybody came down there and had a great time. And so, head on down there again this weekend if you want to watch some Royals baseball. But anyway, when we were there watching the game, and afterwards, you know, they're interviewing everybody, and they finally interview Ned Yost and Dayton Moore. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people that are getting really emotional. And honestly, the most emotion that I had, I couldn't even hear anything because it was so loud in there.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing Dayton Moore and Ned Yost being interviewed and Dayton Moore addressing the team and everything, and I mean, you could see it on their faces, the amount of relief. Like, I mean, if we want to talk about the fact that Dayton Moore can't get out of his own way and he's the biggest roadblock to himself, I mean, that's a different discussion. Regardless, he obviously –
is someone that cares and has to take it really hard when the team does not perform as well as many people, myself included, think that maybe it should. But, you know, so it was, that was when I got the most emotional, was seeing the relief and how proud those two were. And so, you know, props to them, and I feel great for them. And last night, especially, we were talking about this in the emails, last night was about as great of a night for Dayton Moore as you could have hoped, because literally just about every major contributor, and I mean, granted, we're in, the disclaimer here is we're in year 8, so every major contributor should be
right
a direct result of something that Yost has done, or I'm sorry, Dayton Moore has done. But just to put it in perspective, I mean, Eric Hosmer, who we haven't really talked about him.
No.
But if he, that last night could be Eric Hosmer's catapult to superstardom, because he had an unbelievable game.
That was his game. That's like, there's that George Brett game in game, what, I don't remember what game it was, in 85 against the Blue Jays. Well, not even that. I mean, so many other games. You know, his 3 home run game in Yankee Stadium in 1980. You know, that, obviously, Hosmer didn't hit, you know, 3 home runs, but I mean, he walked twice against Lester. He had 3 hits. He scored on that wild pitch. He scored on that Cologne thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had that double play. Yeah, he drove in runs. I mean, he had
a game.
He had a game. Yeah.
And if he's going to make that leap to superstardom, we're going to look back and point and say that was it. That was the game that did it.
Yeah. When it clicked, but, I mean, he just didn't. He, whatever. I'm going to go out there and do it, and he did it.
But, I mean, Eric Hosmer was a Dayton Moore drafted and developed player. You had Salvador Perez, obviously, hits the game winner. He struggled a lot at the plate, and we talked about it, but he hit that game winner.
He had a bad day until that last swing.
Yep, and, I mean, he was it's kind of dicey on exactly how much involvement Dayton Moore had in the recruitment of Salvador Perez, given that was kind of some carryover from the previous regime. But regardless, he definitely took the brunt of the development for Perez. Mm-hmm. You look at James Shields. He was acquired in a bold trade made by Dayton Moore that was criticized by many, including myself. You look at Wade Davis, who pitched the scoreless inning. That was also part of that same trade. You look at Lorenzo Cain, who had a huge night. And we barely talked about him as well. He had 2 RBIs and a couple big hits and a stolen base. And that was another bold trade when Dayton Moore traded Zach Greinke. Before the 2010 season, or before the 2010 season, and then I'm trying to think here, who else was?
Even Nori Aoki had the sack fly, and
Nori Aoki had the sack fly. I mean, the only player that really wasn't a major, or that was a major contributor, that wasn't a Dayton Moore guy, is Billy Butler, who had 2 RBIs and a couple big hits in the game, and some sweet, sweet redemption for Billy Butler for a tough season that he's had.
I was so happy for him.
So happy for him.
That first RBI, I was like, that's awesome, because every time he's up, I'm just ready for the guys who hate Billy Butler to start chirping up, because they're looking for any excuse for it.
And the Billy Butler cheer broke out at the stadium. And so great for him. He's probably going to be gone next year. He's not going to be a Royal anymore. So who knows if he'll ever reach the playoffs again. I was so happy and so glad for him to have that moment.
Well, and there's that one
whole crowd behind him.
When Gregerson was in, I think it was 8th inning, I think it was, where they end up, Hosmer walks to make it 1st and 2nd with 1 out. I mean, how many times have we seen that where Billy Butler's coming up and you're just, oh God, here he's going to ground into a double play. And he hits that little flare into right and gets the RBI. And you know, it didn't turn out the way, you know, it had before. So that was awesome. So, I thought that was
so
great.
Awesome. See, so many great storylines with that game. But,
yeah.
I mean, that was the only – he was the only guy that wasn't either, you know, drafted.
Oh, and Dyson. Dyson was a holdover, but he was, you know.
Yeah.
He was deep in the farm system.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, but it was that was a good night for Dayton Moore, and Ned Yost. I will not say that was a good night for him, because the Royals did not win because of anything Ned Yost did. It was all in spite of what Ned Yost did. So I will hold back any praise there. But, you know, just to be fair, I try and be as fair as possible. on this show when we talk about this, and you know, they deserve some credit. Here we are, National League, American League Division Series, and this is it. You know, and it's that Dayton Moore constructed this team to do exactly what they did last night. So, do you have any similar type thoughts, Mike?
I mean, he did get the pieces together, and it's not perfect. And but, I know it's, I'm really happy for Dayton Moore. I mean, and we've always kind of said that, you know, he's had successes. He's done things well. He's done things right. But he's also, you know, the sins of the past are still there. So he's not absolved of those either. But, you know, currently, who cares? I mean, they're in the playoffs. You know, they faced the Angels 6 times this year. They won 3 of those. Just do that again. Just win 3 games. Just win 3 games. Keep it going. And see, you know, see if you can do something against Baltimore or Detroit. I mean, you know, he'll get a freaking statue pretty much.
Yeah.
If they get through and get 11 more wins and bring another trophy, people aren't going to care that they signed Betancourt twice
If they get 11 more wins, he can sign Betancourt. He can ban long toss. He can tell somebody never to take a walk ever again, and I'll be fine with it. So
I don't know that, but
yeah, I mean, that's obviously hyperbole there, sure. But point being, Dayton Moore will get a much longer leash from this side of the podcast over here. Yeah. If they end up winning a World Series this year.
Well, Brian Sabian's kind of similar in his kind of weirdness in
nope, it's true. Kind
of players and Giants fans. I don't think they're going to complain as much as they might have in 2009, because he's brought them 2 titles.
There was a lot of complaints in 2009, and you know, but then
winning cures a lot of things.
Yep, and they even then the next year when they didn't make the playoffs, I think some of the complaints started creeping back, and then all it took was another year and they win the World Series. And I mean, they got a shot at it this year. They're playing Pittsburgh tonight to see if they can move on like the Royals and maybe make it an every 2 year type of thing. So hey, if Dayton Moore becomes the next Sabian and does that, then fine.
My ego can take the hit if I'm wrong about him. I don't care.
I would love nothing more than to formally apologize and take back every bad thing I've said about Dayton Moore on this show 3 weeks from now. Would absolutely love nothing more than to do that. So Here's hoping I do. I would try and get Dayton Moore on their show so I could personally apologize to him for all the bad things I've ever said. But that's a long ways away. So all right, man, we got the Royals again. This is Wednesday and we're recording it, so I'm not sure when you'll listen to it, but we got the Royals on Thursday and Friday, and this thing is gonna get going. And then I'm going on Sunday to my first ever Royals playoff game. I wasn't able to go last night, but I will be there on Sunday. Hopefully it's not the last Royals playoff game this season, but I am so excited. I will be there. First ever Royals playoff game of my lifetime in Kauffman that I'll be to. It'll really, be really second. Excited. There just, you go. Your second.
Just pointing it out. Just
throwing that out there. Yeah, okay. Go ahead and rub it in there, Mike. But you have any parting thoughts, Mike? We'll kind of leave it here. But
oh, man. I mean, the whole thing has been just crazy. I mean, the last few weeks have really put a lot of Royals fans into thinking back on everything else. And in a way, it's kind of been like, oh, this has been my fan story. Mine's much more tortured than yours. But, you know, I think just everybody's happy. Everybody's happy. And you think about the days of Scott Ellerton making starts and, you know, Brian Anderson getting shelled and trading off Carlos Beltran or, you know, getting Nefi Perez or whatever, you know, all that stuff. It who cares? You know, it happened. It sucked. It was painful. But now they're in. You know, they're in the playoffs. They just won an incredible game. And they have a better than you know, decent shot at knocking off the Angels. I mean, I think World Series odds are like 10 to 1 now. They were 15 to 1 yesterday. So, you know, they're getting better. They're structured in a way that, you know, just get four furious games in the ALCS and get into the World Series and then, you know, see what happens. I mean, teams go on those kinds of runs all the time in baseball, in sports, and whatever. Why not? Why not the Royals? I think we've asked that question on here before. Why not?
Yep, and for years we've asked that question since we've had this show because they've kind of gotten closer and closer to the cusp of where they're at now. And we're always like, oh, if they could just make that one last push, that one last run, you know, why not us? And the answer was always, well, because you're the Royals. Well, I mean, now it's a why not us, and maybe there's not a because you're the Royals reply. Maybe it's, well, this time it is you.
Yeah.
So who knows? I think we'll leave it at that there. And a lot of exciting stuff to talk about here. Hopefully, I mean, it could be, depending on the situation here, we could be looking at next time we record, maybe the Royals are still in the divisional series. Maybe,
if they'll advance,
maybe they'll be out of it. I don't know. Cause if they, is there a day off in between fourth and fifth games?
I think so.
Because I think I heard you never play more than two consecutive days in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think so. I think they have to do that because there's going to be travel.
Yep.
You know that there's going to be, you know, there's always going to be a West team, and you have to have it ready.
If you finish Monday night in Kansas City and then both teams got to fly back to L.A. and play in less than 24 hours, that's not happening. That's so, we might be recording next Tuesday with a Game 5 looming. In this, we might be recording with the Royals having advanced, or we might be recording with the Royals doing a season recap. At this point, who the hell knows?
Yep.
And
see what happens, I guess.
Yep. And, yeah. So, with that, I think we'll leave you. Thanks for coming in. Keep rooting on those Royals. Go out to the ballpark if you can. I know they're all sold out and everything, but, you know, go to Kelly's and watch the games if you can't get out to the ballpark or whatever, and have a freaking blast, because who knows when this is going to happen again, and it has been one hell of a ride so far, and it's only been one game. So keep it up, Royals fans. This the national media, the Royals, everyone is seeing a different light from us, because we are representing 110% for this team, and it is absolutely glorious. So let's keep it moving. Let's keep it rolling. Hopefully, we can be talking about a positive November show for this eventually without getting too far ahead of ourselves. But thanks for coming into Kansas City Baseball Vault. Keep listening, not only for the rest of this playoff run, but into the off season as well. We'll hopefully have an exciting off season with some exciting stuff to look forward to. But, yeah, everybody, get tuned in this week. Let's cheer on these Royals. Thanks for stopping in. For Michael Engel, I'm your host, Jeff Herr. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. And thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.